Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis.
And Jeff Webb.
And you're at Tax Tuesday. So welcome to Tax Tuesday. This is like Taco Tuesday, but with tax. We're bringing tax knowledge to the masses. I wish I was bringing tacos to the masses.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That cool. All right, so let's just dive right on in. We have a lot to go over, and we're going to try to be on time today. These are supposed to be an hour, but if you know us, I think the last time we were an hour was in never. If you ask a really extensive question, we're going to ask you to do it through our Platinum portal. If you're Platinum, or just send it on in to Tax Tuesday to Anderson Advisors. And we'll get you an answer. If you need a detailed response, like a really detailed that's fact specific that requires a professional to actually work with you, then you'll need to be a Platinum client or become a tax client. This is fun, fast, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. So the whole idea here is to give you as much information in a short period of time as possible that you could use to increase your knowledge of the tax system so you're not scared. Frankly, the more that you get to know it, the less likely you're going to be freaked out by it, is the way I look at it. It's kind of like a little bit of knowledge goes a long way to keep the nerves at ease. So just play along with me here. When is your personal tax return due? All right. The answer, Jeff, what is the answer? When is your personal tax return due?
The original due date is April 15th. Keyword, original due date, because you can extend your tax return.
By right, which means your actual due date is October 15th. They spoon feed us the April 15th. That is not the due date of your personal tax return. The actual due date is October 15th. Kind of fun. Here's the next one I'm going to launch. When are your personal taxes due? When are your taxes payable due? Your taxes are due on April 15th. Now, somebody who's tax professional is going to say, oh, they're pay as you go. And they're due. No, your actual due date for making sure that your personal taxes are due, which I want personal taxes here, is April 15th. The tax return is due October 15th. Why is this so important? Well, this is important because we like to file extensions. And what's really important is when our owed taxes due. Well, now you know it's April 15th. When our tax returns due, much later. In other words, you can file an extension by right. It's not something that you're requesting. It's you automatically get this. That's why I say when are the returns actually due? They're not due on April 15th. They are due on October 15th. And this year, I think it's October 16th or something like that.
No, it's 15th.
The October one,
I'm not sure about.
No, the September is the 16th for S-Corps and stuff like that.
Right.
Partnerships. But your tax you do, yeah, let's just say it's going to be October 15th. When your taxes due, if you want to avoid penalties and interest, you pay your taxes the amount that you anticipate that you're going to owe in April. I want to make sure that you don't confuse these two concepts, because it could have, it says, then why are we even filing an extension if all it's not due to October? Keith, you have to let the IRS know that you're extending. Otherwise, they're going to say you're just late. But you have a right. So this isn't a request for an extension. You automatically get an extension. So your taxes are technically not due until October 15th. The taxes are paid by April 15th. Now, the reason that I like to have extensions is because all the stuff that occurs between April and October. And if you're like me, you may have K-1s, you may have properties, you may have businesses, and you may have mistakes that were made. Or if you don't have businesses, maybe you have some investments, maybe somebody sent you a 1098 and then they restate it, or somebody gives you a K-1 and then they restate it. That happened to us the first year they required basis reporting on options. Do you remember that one, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
How many companies restated their 1098s?
virtually all of them that I can remember.
Yeah, just about everybody screwed it up. And guess what? Everybody that got it, that filed their taxes on April 15th got to do. They got to amend them.
Yep.
And they got to, and if they didn't, then they were more likely flagged for an audit, because you're going to have a 1098 that does not link up and is not accurate to the 1098 that's filed on your return. So those two are going to automatically kick it out, saying, hey, somebody's reporting different income to this guy. And granted, it's pretty easy to fix, but still, you're getting that letter from the IRS.
And you know, a few years back, the tax law said at the time before April 15th that you couldn't deduct your mortgage insurance premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And then they changed that midstream.
Again,
we were amending returns for all those people who wanted to get the returns done early.
And so anybody that's been doing this for long enough is going to have a pretty strong opinion. There's some people that are like, oh, I've never been late on my return. I always file in April. Or if they have an S corp, I'm never late on my return. I always file it on, you know, XYZ. I file it on March 15th. And I always say, you're doing the government like a huge favor by jumping in there and trying to get everything in early, but you're doing yourself a disservice because, A, you're stressing yourself out. Like, we're getting those. They stress yep. us out. We're getting people saying, no, I demand you have my taxes due on this date. And you're like, come on. My God, we got a year's worth of books to go through. There's questions. There's things. And we're going to have an artificial deadline because you want to feel good. At the end of the day, it's literally like you're putting pressure on something that doesn't need to have pressure. The stress doesn't need to be there. Just file what you believe is the taxes. If you overpay it, you'll get it back.
Right.
If you underpay it, you'll pay a little bit of interest.
Yep.
You don't even get penalties as long as you're filing on time, right?
Yeah. If you're paid within 90% of what you owe, there's usually no penalties involved.
Yep.
And what's a little crazy about this is the IRS unofficial position on extension. You often hear people say, I don't want to extend. I'll be subject to an audit or it'll increase my audit risk. IRS actually prefers that you extend the returns.
You know what increases your audit risk? Having to file a whole bunch of amendments and having bad information. Yeah, so we tell these people all the time, because we do thousands of returns here, and you'll have somebody issuing out K-1s and their books aren't real great. And you're like, hey, if you're not sure on this, don't issue it. There's nothing worse than sending out 400 amended K-1s to your investors, and
right.
then they just want to wring your neck. You're better off waiting and getting it done right the first time. So are the taxes payable on April 15th an estimate?
You can use an estimate. We often estimate because we don't have all the information. But when we do so, we estimate conservatively.
In other words, you're better off to pay a little bit more there. But let's just say you don't. Like, as long as you're within, like Jeff said, within 90%, you're not going to have penalties. And the interest is, what, half a point a month?
A month, yeah.
Yeah, so it's 6% a year. So you're getting a loan. And shoot, you're giving yourself the summer to basically go through it. Now, here's the other reason this is really important. If you have a business and it has a qualified retirement plan, and this could be a cash balance plan, defined benefit plan, 401k, solo 401k, any of those, you can make a contribution to that, or the business can make a contribution, I should say, up until it files its tax return and you file your tax return. Which means if you have a 401k, and let's say I took salary, say I took a $60,000 salary and I deferred $19,000 into it, the company can still match up to 25% of my salary as a contribution, and it writes it off for last year. So even though we're sitting here in 2019, we could make contributions in 2019 that are deductible in 2018 for last year, up to 25% in the case of a 401k. In a defined cash balance plan or a defined benefit plan, it's the entire amount. And what you're looking at is saying, all right, how much could I do? So on $60,000, for example, I could make a $15,000 tax deductible contribution for last year.
And when can you pay that?
I could pay that up till September 15th.
Exactly.
So
And here's always been our policy is you need to extend that corporate or partnership or whatever return it is we're talking about that has that QRP. So we have that extended due date. I mean, do you agree with that? If I don't extend my...
You're done. If you don't extend, you're hosed.
Right.
So, and I had that same conversation with the guy once. He was like, no, I've never been late on my S-corp. So you can tell I'm bitter about this, right? He's like, I've never been late. I'm going to file my escrow. And I say, please don't. And he goes, I already know what everything is. I know what my numbers are. I'm not going to be changing anything. And I was like, okay. And his accountant filed, it was one of us, and we filed the March 15th S-Corp, and then he filed his personal. But as he's filing his personal, he says, wow, this is much more than I thought. So he extends his personal. And we're into the summer, and he realizes, hey, I have a bunch of money in my company. Why doesn't my company go ahead? And it was a sizable amount. It was about $20-some thousand that he could have matched on his salary. And he goes, you know, hey, could we still make a contribution for last year? I heard you could. And I said, yeah, if we had a time machine, we can go back and undo the fact that we filed that silly tax return that you made me file. I wish we hadn't. And then he learned his lesson on that one. And he says, I point taken. It cost him about $6,000 in taxes is what it, you know, ultimately cost. But it was one of those annoying things where he could have gotten the deduction. All right. So we have a whole bunch of questions on this. Does a C-Corp get an automatic extension as well? Yes. S-Corp? Yes. C-Corp is going to get is it a 6 month? So it's
C-Corp is 6 months.
So
except for that weird June year end.
Yeah, it's kind of a funky one. So it'll be due with your personal. The S-Corp gets a 6 month, but it was due.
Original due March.
Yeah. So
extended due September.
Right.
And even the qualified plans for the 5500s, they get automatic.
Everything gets an automatic extension. They just want you. They're tricking us as taxpayers. 93% of you guys, by the way, said April 15th. So they're really good at tricking us, those little sneaky rabbits. All right. Let's see. What should you pay by April 15th if you've been getting refunds for the previous years? Nothing. Is there a cost for... You can jump in on this if you want, Jeff, but if you've been getting refunds, you've already paid.
Yeah.
Thornton, you're good. File the extension, and what you're doing is you're just pushing back your refunds. The times that I file on time is if I have a loan that requires my tax return or I need a big refund. Is there a cost for an extension? No. What's the form?
For personal, 4868.
4868, or you just email us and say, please file my extension. Do we do it as a courtesy?
If we do your taxes, we do it as a courtesy. We may charge if we don't.
All right.
I think a certain nationwide firm charges $100 for an extension.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Right. What is the penalty for not filing a 5500 for a solo 401? Do they have
There are remedies for that. I think it's around $750 to remedy that. For nonprofits and retirement plans, they have to be filed on time, or the penalties can be pretty ugly.
Let's see. What is the? If somebody asked this. I live in California, so with the 2017, I'm not so confident about getting a refund. But don't worry about it. If you're within 90%, you're okay. And how do you go? Returns from solo 401ks. Somebody's saying yes. Only if you're over $250,000 of plan assets. Folks establish the IRAs. We have a company that we kick them over to. IRA Club's really good. If you're looking for someone that's a self-directed, if you're not needing a self-directed, you're just going to trade, then I would do TD Ameritrade or Schwab or one of those. Yeah, so a solo 401k, if it's a husband and wife and less than 250, you're not required to do a tax return. What are your charges for filing or taxes, personal business? It varies. So that one's, you know, what you do is you end up having somebody take a look at them and they'll give you a pretty good idea of ballpark. And we never want to tear you away from somebody who's doing a good job. So if you're happy with your guy, we can look over their stuff. It's free. If you're platinum, we do a 2-year tax review as a compliment, and we can tell you whether they're doing things right. I had a C corp with no business. Do I still need to file? Jeff, yeah, you have some business no matter what. So
yeah, if you're filing as a corporation, that being a C corp or an S corp, as long as that corporation's in existence, you are required to file a return.
Mm-hmm.
Partnership rules are a little different, but corporations, you got to file.
All right. Somebody just said, what is the $250,000? Is it income or total asset value? It's total asset value of the IRA.
Of all assets.
Yeah. And it's not for an IRA. It's for a 401k. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to jump into the questions that we have.
Let's answer some questions
that were asked. But first off, free stuff, because we love free. Tax Tuesday free stuff. Go to iTunes and sign up for us and leave us a review and say that we're all right so that we like to keep doing this because, well, believe it or not, this is kind of fun, but we don't want to waste your time or ours. So if you like our podcasts and stuff, please let everybody know. Google Play is free. Hey, we love free.
Free tacos would be good.
Free. You with the tacos. All right. Opening questions. Can you trade within a Roth IRA or an LLC account with an EIN number? I will answer that one. What deductions can I take as a W-2 contractor? We will answer that. What types of moving expenses are tax deductible? How do you report and issue a 1099 miscellaneous? Is it too late for 2018? What are the advantages of becoming an opportunity zone business? You guys asked some pretty good questions. So let's jump into the first one. Can you trade within a Roth IRA or an LLC account with an EIN number? So Jeff and I were both scratching our heads on this one a little bit because we're saying, all right, yes, you can absolutely trade within a Roth IRA. And absolutely, you can trade within an LLC with an EIN number. The question is, can you trade within an LLC that's in a Roth IRA with an EIN number?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And the answer is, yeah, you can do that too. I don't see why you would. You're just creating an extra LLC. But if you wanted to trade, when you say trade, maybe you want to trade in non-marketable securities. Maybe you want to, you're doing some private placements and things like that. And your custodian won't let you. Then you can set up an LLC. If you want to do real estate and things like that, it's a good idea to have an LLC. And the Roth IRA actually sets up the LLC. Now, you're not going to be able to do this at TD Ameritrade or Schwab or any of those. You'd have to go to a self-directed IRA custodian. We recommend IRA Club. Dennis over there is really awesome, but there's plenty of others. And you can make sure that you're covering it.
Yeah, about the only place I wouldn't do trading is in a corporation if that's its primary source of income. It can cause issues. But other than that, I don't see any place that you couldn't trade.
Mm-hmm. Somebody asked, and I just have to answer this because I know there's anxiety when somebody asks a question like this. I have a solo 401k with approximately $90,000. Do I have to file taxes on this? No, you're good, John. See, we're reducing stress one person at a time. What deductions can I take as a W-2 contractor? So that means you're an employee.
So yeah, most of those were wiped out with the tax law change beginning in 2018.
Miscellaneous itemized deductions went to the wayside.
Yeah, so if you used to do those, what was the 2106 called? The employee expenses?
Yeah,
unreimbursed expenses.
Unreimbursed expenses are gone, which is why teachers, boy, it sucks to be a teacher right now.
Yeah. Now, if you're in a state that still taxes you, like California rather than Nevada, you still want to tell us about any of those expenses because your state may still allow those deductions. But yeah, most of the other deductions are gone. I think the school teacher deduction is the only one I can think of that's left. The $250.
The what?
The $250 educator expense.
Is that still there?
I think it's still there.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm thinking of a contractor and they're running around, they're driving their car, they're buying tools and all this stuff. And can they write it off? No, they are completely toast. You're taking the standard deduction or you're going to itemize, but you're not, when you're itemizing, you do not get the benefit of those unreimbursed expenses. Let's see, it says teacher is under adjustments.
Yeah, that's where it used to be.
Yeah, so.
And I thought they had retroactively.
Yeah, somebody else is saying the teacher 250 is still there. Oh, we got all these smart people out there. But wait, are you part of the 93% that said that you had to? Now we're going to ask a question. Somebody's going, what is this 90?
So in this case of what the deduct, if I'm like the contractor guy.
Everybody's saying it's still available. They're like jumping on you, Jeff.
Hey, I said I thought it was still available.
Yeah.
So if you're a W-2 employee that has substantial expenses you're incurring, mm-hmm. do you think about going independent or working something different with your?
Yeah, I would actually be looking and see whether I could be an independent contractor if that's the case. If I'm having to incur a bunch of the expenses, then there's two things that I'm going to do. I'm either going to go to my employer and say, hey, you need to reimburse me.
Right.
Or I'm going to say, you need to pay me as an independent contractor. But don't hire me as an employee and make me incur all my my costs on my own.
Because your employer can reimburse you and deduct those costs.
Yeah, right. The employer can do an accountable plan and write off all those expenses. You know, and you say, hey, do that. Don't give me a bonus. Write off all my expenses instead. I mean, that it sounds funny, but that's literally it. If you walk up to your employer and you say, look, I'm incurring an extra $3,000 a year. Instead of giving me bonuses or anything else, how about you just reimburse these? It's tax deductible to the company. It's not, doesn't have to go through payroll. So there's no FICA, there's no FUTA, SUTA, workman's comp and all that garbage that gets added onto these things. It's just flat out cashola in your pocket. I always call it Krispy Kreme money. If your employer says bring in Krispy Kremes and you bring in all those Krispy Kremes, those are tasty donuts, by the way, if you don't know what those are. So we're talking about tacos and Krispy Kreme. So let's say you bring in the Krispy Kremes, your company can just hand you a check for that amount. You don't have to report it anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere on your return. That's what a The beautiful part of an accountable plan is if your employer does it, it's great. Now, if somebody says that an independent contractor, you may lose your bennies, which may cost you more, get them to reimburse you. Robert, I agree. But on the when you say the bennies, your benefits, you're always going to factor that in. So the employer is paying whenever you're a W-2. I use 20% as a rule of thumb of what it's costing your employer to have you with the form of benefits. And so they're going to save that. And so I'd be looking at them saying, hey, pay me that extra 20%. Then you can go get your own benefits. And if you're set up right, like let's say you're doing it as a C-Corp and you want to be able to expense all your medical, dental, vision and everything, 100% deductible, 100%. All of your co-pays, everything. So health insurance is the biggest. Absolutely. You know, here's the thing is also when you're on your own right now, it costs me about $500 for a primary employee. And with the family, it costs about another $1,000 to cover them. If I went to MediShare or some of those outside sources that are not big health insurance, but that are they still work under the Affordable Care Act, but they're not typical insurance, high deductible plans, I can knock that down to about $600 a month total. And I can't do that as a big employer. I have to use certain types of plans to cover group plans. And stinkolas. We got a lot of questions coming in. I'm going to keep jumping through this. So the long and short of it is the best scenario for you is to get your employer to reimburse you. If they won't, you may want to consider becoming a contractor, independent contractor, I should say, and setting up your business separately. Depending on how much you're making, you could actually save yourself quite a bit of money. If you're an S Corp, you could have the 20% 199A deduction against all of your income, which could knock your income way low. You could avoid the self-employment tax, which is when you're getting W-2, you're paying FICA on all of it. Your employer's paying half, you're paying half. We can avoid a big chunk of that. You can do your own 401k and defer $19,500 of your first amount of money you make into your plan. You can hire your spouse. You can hire your kids. You can do all sorts of fun stuff. So I tend to go a little nutty on this, but get a lot of things. Where do I get more information on that low-cost health plan? Go to MediShare. And I don't know how to spell it, but I could look it up. There's folks out there, but you go to MediShare and a bunch of alternative health plans. What they are is they're usually religious groups that get together and say, hey, we're exempt from the ACA, and they're pooling their risk pools. So they're very different, and they're a lot less expensive. Yeah. What you do is you do one of those, and then you do a high deductible. When I say high deductible, it might be a $10,000 deductible health insurance plan, which costs you very little because there's very little chance you're going to use it. But if you have a catastrophic injury, cancer, whatnot, they'll come in and pick you up. What type of moving expenses are tax deductible?
Oh, this so sounds like the last question.
These people ask what. It's literally the same thing. They got rid of it, unless you're what, military?
You have to be in the military with permanent change of station orders to be able to deduct your move. And usually when you have a permanent change of station, the government's already paying for your move or the vast majority of it. So virtually nobody can deduct moving expenses anymore. And employers can no longer reimburse and deduct those expenses either. Mm-hmm. They can always reimburse, but they can't deduct them.
Yep. Hey, somebody asked a really funky question. I love funky questions, so I have to answer this. So I apologize, guys. You can't write off those moving expenses. Maybe your state will let you write off something, right?
I haven't looked into that, whether the states are in compliance or not.
It doesn't matter. Your state and local taxes are cap, and you just hosed. If you moved, you're toast. Get your employer to reimburse you. If the here's one. They said, I have an S Corp, and they said, I have no reason to have a C Corp after some calculations. Can I start another sole proprietorship, hire my spouse as the only employee of the sole proprietorship, and have a one-person 105 HRA plan? That's a health reimbursement. I love the way you're thinking, but the answer is no, because you're a 2% or greater shareholder and they're your spouse. So
right,
you're toast. But I love the way you're thinking. You're trying to get there. What you can do, though, is have a C Corp and pay the C Corp and have the C Corp have your spouse work for the C Corp, pay it a reasonable amount, and then get the money out of the C Corp by having them get the health coverage and cover you as well.
Right. Unfortunately, the C Corp's the only place to do that 105 plan.
Yes. And are MediShare type premiums tax deductible in a C Corp? Yes. In fact, you can reimburse yourself any medical expense out of a C Corp, including copays, including your deductibles, including non-covered procedures, including, like, these are going to sound really weird, but these are actual cases. Pools, we've had spas for different types of medical conditions. If your doctor says you need it, your insurance company's not going to cover it, your corporation can technically reimburse it. it. So, yes. And you can't even put a limit on it.
And the other thing with the high deductible plans, it makes you eligible for an HSA, a health savings account, if you so desire.
Yeah, if you have a high deductible plan, then you can actually do the, how much can you stick in that HSA?
Single, last I remember, was $3,300.
And then family.
Family was like $6,500.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And by the way, you can put that in. That's deductible money that you don't ever have to pay tax on. So you can do the HSA and still have the Medishare and still have the high, like these are things that are not inclusive.
Right.
Can I reimburse health insurance from the S Corp I own? Yeah, Christine, but you're paying tax on it. So even though you your health is covered by the S Corp, the way the rules are is you have to account that as wages. Somebody says extra $1,000 if you're an old fart. Yes. Yeah. Stacy, if you're an old fart.
He's seen my premium.
Out of all the words that are coming up, I got gravitated right to the fart. I don't know what it is. Like I'm just a juvenile. Let's see. Next one. And we have lots of questions we're going to get to. Don't worry. How do you report and issue a 1099 MISC, which is a 1099 miscellaneous? And then is it too late for 2018? Jeff, you love these things.
How do you report? Well, you're just reporting payments made to others that are not corporations.
Non-corporations over $600.
Over $600 for services,
mm-hmm.
Not for materials purchased. So you would actually report that on a Form 1099 with that vendor or whoever's name on there.
Yeah. Now, you're a little late for 2018. It was actually due January 31st was the first due date.
Yeah. The ones with box, the non-employee compensation, we call it, your independent contractors, those had to be filed by January 31st. The rest of the 1099 MISC had to be filed by yesterday.
Oh, so we can go back in time day. What happens if you file late?
If you file late, that's usually a penalty of $50 per 1099.
What if you just don't file?
And they catch you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a much bigger penalty of $50.
Don't file. No, I'm not going to say don't file. I'm not going to say don't file.
And here's the thing. I mean, if it's a 1099 between you and your kids or somebody you know, it's maybe a little more important when you need to report that income to a third party who has to have that information.
All right, so I'm going to give you guys my 1099 story. We were one of 50,000 companies that were, when they did these mid-sized company audits for their, what they did is they went after everybody looking at their payrolls and independent contractors. They wanted to make sure that they weren't classifying employees and independent contractors. You're going to see this as a pattern with the service, the IRS. So they did 50,000 companies. We were one of 50,000 companies. I want to say it was about 10 years ago. But they go through all of your payrolls. They go through all of your contractors. And you have to have either a W-4 for your employer or a W-9 for your contractors.
Right.
And we had a couple that we didn't have 10 W-9s on that were corporations, but they had since expired. So this is kind of the rub. You're looking and going, wait a second. These companies, one was a landscape company, another one was a magician. He ended up being number two on America's Got Talent. So like we were watching him and we were cursing his name because he cost us $700. And here's how. If you don't 1099 or you don't have your W-9, you're not in compliance, then you have to pay a withholding. Even though they probably paid the tax, it doesn't matter if they paid the tax, the IRS can come and say, you have to pay your 28%. So we ended up paying like $700. It was like, we looked at it and said, it's cheaper just to pay it than to try to track these guys down and get all this stuff because they weren't answering phone calls. I'm just kind of annoyed.
Yeah, this is one reason why we often say that before you pay any of your vendors, make sure you have a W-9. Because if you pay me and then ask me for tax reporting information later, there's a good chance I'm not going to give you that information.
So you better do it.
Better do it before you give them the money.
Yep, that's what we do. It's like, here, W-9 and I'll send you a check. Somebody's asking about Michael Avenatti. You guys are horrible. How did he get away with not filing for 10 years? Did he not file for 10 years?
I'm not aware of that.
All I know is that you're assuming he got away with it because the last time I checked, he's under indictment. He's been charged with tax fraud and with all sorts of heinous stuff. Like he messed with Nike. Don't mess with gorillas, guys. Here's a hint. Don't poke the bear. Nike is a big, huge company. And they said, oh, Avenatti. Within a week, he was being arrested, which is bizarre. Because you can't get the feds to do anything in a week, but all of a sudden you just woke up the bear and the bear is going to take a bite out of you. And,
I was shocked. He always seemed like such a nice guy.
Such creepy foreign lawyer. I know that's what you guys are all thinking. Yeah, no, no. He was really doing a nice thing by helping somebody blackmail. No, I'm not a good lawyer's bug me. All right. Oh, he messed with Trump or was that Stormy? You guys are horrible. We uncorked something here. You guys are all being honorary. All right. What's the advantages of becoming an opportunity zone business? You want to hit this? Or I
go ahead and
this
hit
all day long. This is crazy. So here's the deal. With the opportunity zone, the Tax Cut and
Jobs Act.
Yeah, the TCJA. I'll just call it the Trump Tax Act. But so is it too late to issue a 1099 or not? It's not too late, but I probably wouldn't for 2018. You are late. You're going to pay a penalty, and it depends on who it is, too. If it's a large amount, I would pay the penalty and just go ahead and do it. If it's a small amount, then I probably wouldn't. I would take my chances. What are the advantages of becoming an opportunity zone business? So here's how it worked. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act created these areas where they need basically economically disadvantaged areas where they want people to invest in the businesses and in the properties there. And so all states came up with a list of the zip codes that were their areas, what they call opportunity zones. So disadvantaged areas that need investment. What it is good for the investor is that you can defer your capital gains, any capital gains, if you invest in what's called an opportunity zone fund. So it's a LLC taxed as a partnership, LLC taxed as a corporation, or a corporation. Those are your opportunity zone funds. As long as you invest those funds within 180 days of the taxable event, so you sell some Bitcoin or you sell stock or you sell property, and within 180 days of the sale, you put it in an opportunity zone fund, and that opportunity zone fund invests 90% of its assets in the opportunity zone. So if it has $1 million, it needs to buy 900,000 of opportunity zone property or businesses. The reason people do this is twofold. The number one reason is because you're deferring that gain. You do not eliminate that gain that you have. So let's say Jeff sells $1 million of Bitcoin. He owes, let's say it's long-term, he's held it for over a year. He owes long-term capital gains in 2019. He just sold it. He puts it into an opportunity zone fund that's buying Dairy Queens in opportunity zones. I'll just use that as an example instead of real estate. I know all you guys want to talk about real estate, but these can be businesses too. And Noman, this is going to make sense here in a second of how it's different than a 1031 exchange. So I put the money into this thing. My $1 million or Jeff's $1 million, he doesn't pay tax on in 2019. He doesn't pay tax on it in 2020. He doesn't pay tax on it in 2021, 22, 23, 24, and then comes 2026. He will pay tax on that money in 2026, but he will also get what's called a step up in basis on a portion of it. And that portion of it is 15%. So if Jeff has that $1 million he would owe tax on, when are the taxes due? April 15th of next year, if he sold it this year. So he'd owe tax on $1 million. He'd owe 20% on $1 million plus the state, where we're in Nevada, so there's no state income tax. So he'd owe $200,000. What he gets to do is he gets to not only does he not have to pay that $200,000, but he gets a step down or step up. He's going to not have to pay tax on 15% of it. So he's going to pay tax on $850,000. Mm-hmm. And let's say it's still 20% and it's $850,000. He's going to pay $170,000, not the $200,000, in 2026. So that's benefit number one. Benefit number two is the investment. He put $1 million into an opportunity zone. And let's say that $1 million becomes worth $5 million. So long as Jeff holds that property for 10 years, so he has these Dairy Queens and he owns them for 10 years, he pays zero tax on that growth. So at the end of 10 years, Jeff sells all of his Dairy Queens and he gets to keep $5 million in his pocket. So Jeff paid, instead of $200,000 of tax, if he had done this without using the Opportunity Zone, he would have paid $170,000. Plus, if he had done his own money, he would have had to pay on all that gain, $4 million worth of gain. He would have paid another $800,000. He'd be paying close to it. He would have paid about basically $1 million of taxes. Yeah. He instead is paying $170,000. So he lowered his tax bill by $830,000 under that scenario. And I just pulled that up out of my ear. How long can you park the money before reinvesting? Somebody asked about this. So when you put your money into a opportunity zone fund, there's a testing period every 6 months or the end of the year where the 90% needs to be invested in the opportunity zone. So you literally have to put that money in. I would say within 6 months. So I was talking about it with Clint today, one of my partners, and we're not aware of anything that accelerates that. But if Jeff sells his Bitcoin, puts it in a fund, and that fund deploys those resources 3 months later, technically Jeff could be 9 months after the sale date and still be in compliance. How do you find those opportunity zone funds? They're out there, or you make your own, Norman. So you can become your own opportunity zone fund by creating your own opportunity zone, LLC taxed as a partnership or corp, and we have to do a special filing. I think it's an 8996 that we're filing, and you're deferring it with an 8949 on your 1040.
Right.
See, I love tax forms. I only know that because Jeff Martin knows the tax forms.
If you are a real estate investor, trader, or business owner who wants to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and build future wealth, then you need to attend the next 3-day tax and asset protection event sponsored by Anderson Business Advisors. At the event, podcast hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman will discuss the art of building generational wealth, ninja equity stripping strategies to discourage lawsuits, the reason to forget LLCs for real estate, tax strategies to stay out of the IRS crosshairs, avoid the joint venture chamber of horrors, and much more. The Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Event is held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Join us for the next 3-day Tax and Asset Protection Event and network with other investors and business owners while learning strategies to build your wealth and help you sleep better at night with a solid peace of mind knowing you have prepared for anything. Learn about the next event dates and locations by going to AndersonAP.com and register today. That's AndersonAP.com to register. AndersonAP.com.
What is required to move an existing business to an opportunity zone? I don't think you can take something that you already own and make it into an opportunity zone property unless somebody's investing in it that's not related to you. Is it possible to create an OZ fund for unrelated third-party investors and not be a broker-dealer? Yes, that would be called a Reg D offering or a private placement. And yeah, you don't have to be a broker-dealer to do that. You can even get carried interest. You get all these good things in those, but you know that's security stuff. And then are there any self-dealing issues investing in opportunity zones, which I have an interest in, or does it have to be someone else's business? Technically, I think it has to be somebody else's business, but I'm just going to give you this. All I can tell you is from the tax standpoint, this is how the rules work. You always want to look. This is kind of complicated stuff, guys, right? There's somebody just asked a really good question, which is what's the difference between an opportunity zone and a 1031 exchange? So a 1031 exchange is for real estate only, and you have to exchange property for more real estate. And when I say property, real property, so real estate for more real estate.
Right.
So Jeff, let's say I sell my mobile home park. Can I buy a commercial building?
Yes.
I sell my condo. Can I buy 6 single family residences?
You can.
Yeah. Can what are the rules regarding a 1031 exchange?
1031 exchange, you have to identify your replacement properties within 45 days of selling your property. Everything has to go through a qualified intermediary. This is basically somebody who's going to hold the cash for you from the sale. The exchange of properties actually has to happen within 180 days, but it has to be one or more of those properties you initially identified in the first 45 days. So if you're going to do one of these things, you really need to have your ducks in a row before you start it.
Yep. Or you do a reverse exchange. If you already have property, get them to acquire the property for you and then sell your properties and exchange it. But it has to be of greater or equal value to avoid the tax. And then your basis just goes forward. So the reason the opportunity zone is so hot is because people are like, hey, I'll dump a bunch of money into real estate there. The rule on the real estate is you have to double the improved value, or if it's land, you just have to double the value. Meaning that if you buy a piece of land for $500,000, you have to invest $500,000 in improvements. If you buy a piece of property like a building for $1 million and the land is worth $200,000 and $800,000 is that building, you have to invest $800,000 in that building. And it just has to be, like if you put cash in there, you have 31 months. So if you sell your Bitcoin for $1 million, you buy a piece of property for $600,000 and you have $400,000 sitting there in cash. If you put that $400,000 into that $600,000 property, assuming that, let's say the land value was $200,000 and the improvement was $400,000, then you're fine. As long as you do all the rehab within that 31 months. If you can't do it, then a portion of it will be taxable back to the very beginning. It could actually be pretty nasty if you don't. So you got to make sure that you're picking when it's real estate that you're doing it right. God, I got a lot of questions on these. This is fun. This is always a kick in the pants, these questions. Okay, if I do a 1031 exchange, rental into a rental, and keep the new rental as a rental for 2 to 4 years and then move in and live there for 3 to 5 years, can I sell it and take the home exclusion? How is the accumulated past depreciation of a rental accounted for at this point? Alyssa, you ask really good questions. So first off, we have investment property that then we're going to make it into personal property. I think you have to hold it for 5 years. Investment property to make it a 121 exclusion.
Oh.
And then you have periods of disqualified use. So usually we're doing the opposite. You have a piece of property that you've lived in and owned, and then you rent it for a few years and then sell it. The rule is you have to live in it as your primary residence 2 of the last 5 years, and then they're going to disqualify a portion of it, of the total amount of time you owned it, for disqualified use, which is what that rental is going to be. As it went rental and then became a personal residence, they're going to say, all right, you lived in it for 5 years, you rented it for 4 years, you're going to get 4/5, or whatever they call that. Yeah, that's about 4/5, whatever that ratio is, of the $500,000 exclusion if you're married, or if it's $250,000. And then here's the most important thing for you to take away from this, Alyssa. The 121 exclusion is only for capital gains. So it will have zero effect on your depreciation. Your depreciation, you'll have to recapture all of it, but it goes up to 25%. So what I usually do when I see these types of scenarios is I say, if it was a rental before, make it a rental again and then sell it under a 1031 exchange. And then you can avoid the tax too. Somebody says, where do I find areas that are opportunity zones? Is there a website? Yes, you Google opportunity zones heat map and you will find it. It's one of the first things that pops up. Can an existing property be classified into an OZ if it is the designation? I don't know what that means. You just have to be in the opportunity zone, which is in a zip code. And then somebody says, would this work for exercising stock options? Yes. When I exercise and they take taxes off the top and send me the balance, I'd like to use the funds for an OZ investment. What about the taxes paid up front? You will get them back, Todd, because you're going to say I'm deferring all my tax, right?
I'm not sure about that because it's usually a payroll withholding on the stock grants.
Well, it depends on what you're doing with it. You're exercising a stock option, and then is he selling the stock? I guess it would have to be capital gains. So I believe you're going to work, Todd, but it would have to be capital gain.
Yeah, a lot of times with these stock options that you're exercising, that you've been granted options by your company, you're already getting a step up in basis in that stock. So there's probably not going to be a whole lot of capital gains there.
Mm-hmm. Somebody asked a really long, I thought it might be opportunity zone related, but there's lots of questions.
But yeah, I've noticed with these opportunity zones.
It's payroll withholding on capital gains. So as long as it's capital gains, Todd, then you'd be able to do it. Yeah. So let's say that if it's an apartment building in the OZ area, can you benefit from the capital gain treatment? Yes. And if you invested it for 10 years and it doubled, you would have paid zero tax. You're hitting the nail on the head. That's what they want you to do. They want you to go, and there's people that are doing it. We have clients that are doing it. Maureen's a great example. Dumping a lot of money in there because they know that these properties are worth a ton after a while, especially what some people do is they target apartment buildings with bad management or that have lots of money that needs to be put into them. So again, you have to put whatever that improved value is that's sitting on that land, you have to double it.
Yeah, so you got to be a little judicious about the property you're picking out. I like what you were saying, good ideas. The rundown, more historical type buildings or gold mines or something like this. Mm-hmm. There's just lots of opportunities here. And it's obvious that this credit was designed or this deduction to help these disadvantaged areas.
Yep. And if somebody just said, we had the property and we already turned it around, does it qualify? No, it won't qualify. But here's what you do. Now you know about it. You already know what you're doing. Target another building in that opportunity zone. Pull the money out of the existing property to invest in it. And then sell a bunch of something with a bunch of capital gains. It's all just cash. You're just designating, hey, I'm deferring the cash or the capital gains that I had on investment X for putting it into this opportunity zone.
Right.
It doesn't matter where you get the money. So yeah, I'd pull the money out of the existing and then I would defer. Like I'd say, hey, I have a big tax appetite. I'm going to sell a bunch of stuff that made money and I'm not going to pay tax on it. And I'm going to put it into another building in the opportunity zone. I hope that makes sense. All right, let's look at fun stuff. Hey, I hope you guys like this stuff. If you do, then come to the TaxWise workshop, or better yet, you can do this cool. And Patty, if you're rolling around out there, post to the chat this website. We made it smaller. You'll see that I griped last 2 weeks ago about the way our tech guys like to do some fun stuff. you know, they like to make really long endings. So it's AndersonAdvisors.com, 3-for-1. Are you familiar with the Delaware Statutory Trust for doing a 1031 exchange? Yes, I am familiar with those. They're treated as, you can invest in the trust if it's holding the other real estate. They treat it as owning real estate. All right, lots of questions being asked. I apologize if I sometimes just start answering them. Oh, we're already at an hour. Bad, we're almost halfway through. No, just kidding.
Talk about some good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here's somebody, this is related to one of the other questions. If I move into my rental house for a number of years, then turn it back into a rental for the remainder of my life, and then let my children inherit, do I avoid the recapture? Yes, there's a step up in basis. It steps up to its fair market value on the date of passing. I know that I avoid the capital gains because of the step up, but it's all of it, everything.
Right.
There's no depreciation. And then this is the beautiful part, Shelley. You have a rental house. This is why I never sell anything, by the way. I always look and say, why the heck would I sell something when all I have to do is hold on to it and I depreciate it. And then when I die, my kids can depreciate it again. It's like I get to write it off twice. Or three times, because then if they pass it on. That's why I tend to be of the mindset, you invest forever. That's why I do infinity investing. If you guys have ever heard me talk about infinity investing, can a 1031 exchange be used to obtain opportunity zone property? Yeah, but why would you?
Right. It's...
Yeah, this is capital gains deferral. You're going to have depreciation recapture if you take a 1031 exchange property and sell it and don't exchange it in something else. So you're still going to get hit. All right. First off, we own a software business and want to know if there are any advantages to moving our existing business into a designated opportunity zone. Are there any special requirements to do so? You would be a qualified opportunity zone asset, but they would have to, let's see. So there's two things. First off, if I have an existing business in an opportunity zone, then you'd need a fund that invests its assets into your business, which means it's buying it from. So if you have an existing business, you're really not going to have much unless you're raising money for it through outside investments who are then owning opportunity zone property. And so they would just have to put their money in that opportunity zone property. So Scott, the answer is, yeah, you probably want to make that into a private placement. You want to break your business and then you want to raise money for it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be you. Somebody else asks, I borrowed $100,000 from my cash value life insurance policy at 5%, and they want to loan it to an LLC, tax as a partnership, at 8%, and then they're going to take that money and invest in a bridge loan that returns 12%. So the question is, can I write off the 5% on the loan from my life insurance policy? Jeff, do you have a problem with somebody writing off personal interest that's being used for business?
Typically, no. If that loan is being used exclusively for that business, I usually don't have a problem with that.
Yep.
So yeah, you could report that 5% as investment interest because you're going to be adding 8% of that interest to income. So one would offset at least partially the other.
Absolutely. Yep. You're able to do it because it's not going to be going on your personal tax. You're not trying to write it off on your personal tax return as personal tax. You're writing it off as an investment expense. It would offset the income. So the 12% comes back. Your cost on it's that 5%. So you're only going to have to pay tax on the net. Somebody says, although I believe the current tax cuts have helped everyone. Someone said it actually doesn't help small businesses like his friend. He's self-employed and said his tax refund this year was reduced by $5,000. What are the facts?
Well, here's part of the thing that as everybody is focusing on comparing this year's refund to last year's refund. And what you really need to be comparing is this year's tax to last year's tax.
Yeah, the refund is only so good as the money that you paid in. But my guess is that they're looking at this from a standpoint of maybe they didn't get the 199A deduction. Maybe they were structured incorrectly. Maybe they phased out. So what happened was the Congress went off. Often when they did the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, they slashed the C Corp tax rate by almost half. They cut it from a high of 39% to 21%, which is pretty freaky. No bueno. Obviously, they went and chopped that up. And then all the little guys were saying, hey, that's not fair. Why are we not getting this big tax cut? I mean, the corporation's got a big tax cut. And what they did is they said, hey, for the little guys, we're going to give you this thing called a 199A deduction, which is this 20% deduction on your qualified business income. So if you make $100,000 in your business as a sole proprietor or as an S Corp or whatever, you're only going to have to pay tax on 80% of it. So if you made $100,000, you're only going to pay tax on $80,000. That's going to be a substantial tax cut. However, certain types of businesses phase out, and if you're making too much money, like you individually as the owner of the business, if you make over, you're married, filing jointly, you make over $315,000, or you're single and you make over $157,000, you start to phase out. In certain businesses, there is no coming back, which is called a specified service business. Other businesses, they do another test where they say, well, how much payroll did you have? You can write off up to 50% of it or 25% of the payroll plus, I forget what it is, 2.5% of the unadjusted basis of the assets that you own. So that's for real estate investors. And yes, you can write off. This actually works against rents and all this fun stuff. So they gave you this big tax cut. So without knowing more, I'm going to look and say your friend shouldn't be worse off. In fact, they're probably much better off if their company is set up correctly to allow them to take advantage of that 20% haircut. But not all businesses get it, and lots of people phase out, and then they get mad. The other reason that people are getting slapped really hard, and when I say hard, I mean it's really frustrating for them, is on the fact that we had removal of itemized business deductions, and we have a cap on your state and local tax deduction, which is this, they call it SALT, but it's your property taxes plus your income taxes. You can only write off on your, against your federal taxes up to $10,000, and you have to itemize your deductions. So,
and I'm seeing people losing tens of thousands of dollars of deductions just on the state and local tax loss.
It's a lot. Yeah. And so so if you're in New York or Connecticut, Maryland, California, these taxes, it kind of stinks. It's not good. It's really hurting you. So tax cuts weren't for me. Well, I used to do it. Last year, I was having fun with this. I call it Taxmageddon. When they removed the miscellaneous itemized deductions, where you couldn't write off miscellaneous itemized deductions, Illinois, there's somebody saying, yep, they're feeling the pain too. They really hurt a lot of people, especially people with managed investment accounts, things like that. So pretty painful. And by the way, somebody asked about investing inside of a C corp or inside of a corporation. I'm saying we tend not to because it's capital gains and you're hurting yourself. And if you transfer out an appreciated asset, the stock to yourself, it's considered wages. So we tend to do that through something else. If you're going to write off all the gain, then we don't really care. So if you're going to do it through a corporation, you have a small trading account, you make $10,000 a year, you're able to write it all off, and we don't really care. That's just as an aside. I forgot to answer that question. That's fizzing around out there. So what ends up happening, and by the way, I'll use that as an example. If you have somebody who has a couple million bucks sitting in a managed account, they can't pay their advisor anymore, the guy that's managing it or the guy that's managing it, and write that off, period. So there's only one way to do it, which is to hold that in a partnership and have the entity, the corp, more than likely be the manager of that. So if you have an LLC, you'd have the corporation be a partner and a manager of it. So normally you'd have the corporation own 20%, let's just say for an example. Mm-hmm. And that corporation would get 20% of the income, plus it could be paid a reasonable management fee, which, by the way, was a question asked way back in the beginning by somebody who threw a question out there before we even started. He said, what is a reasonable management fee? And the answer is anything you would pay a third party.
Right.
And it's whatever the market would bear. So it could be $10,000, it could be $30,000, it could be more. It's whatever, depending on what they're doing, what you could hire a third party to actively look over all your assets and shepherd them. Somebody says, what portion of the deductions people are losing to the state deduction limit or miscellaneous itemized? This does not make sense. Were lost to P's or AMT previously? I don't know, John. I think he's asking how much of the itemized deductions, the miscellaneous deductions, where the P's limitation was the phase out or the AMT, how much we're getting?
Well, both state and local taxes and miscellaneous deductions were add backs for AMT, but after the last correction to AMT, it was really hitting less people unless they were paying a ton of state tax and local taxes and miscellaneous deductions. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I've really played into the calculation of how much better it is because it didn't affect everybody.
Questions you can always ask us, Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors, or visit AndersonAdvisors.com and make sure to subscribe to our podcast and say, hey, that doesn't suck. That means give us lots of stars. And we always put these things out. I usually break them into two pieces and put them as a podcast. So while you're exercising or driving, you can listen to us answer lots of questions. Love to answer questions. Here's some more, by the way. the way. If my only source of income is investment income capital gains and I receive a refund for my 2018 federal estate return, should I be using the refund towards paying my quarterly taxes for 2019? Although I don't know what my investment gains are going to be. Or if I overpay my estimate, will I have to pay taxes on any refund I get next year? In other words, is it better to pay estimated taxes or just pay a penalty?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to be in favor of the estimated taxes.
Such an account.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, what, 4 or 5% a year penalty on failure to make estimated taxes. And there are those people who, if they have a dollar in penalty, they're going to be very upset.
Which, I was kind of looking at it and say, I got to keep the money in my pocket, so I'm not worried. So what you do is you say, hey, what you can do is pay, 110% of last year's taxes and not care at all, and then you don't have to worry about it. So what you can do is you can always apply it towards your last year's taxes. If you received a refund, it doesn't mean that you didn't pay any tax. It just means that you paid too much tax. So look at what your actual tax amount is. Pay 110% of that and don't worry about it anymore.
Okay, and I'm going to say what I think you were thinking is that if I'm investing this money and I can make more than I'm going to pay in penalty, why not do that?
I've done that. I've done that exact thing. I remember sitting there where we had opportunities come through and we're like, hey, you know what? When you're growing, we're like, hey, would we rather invest it towards, putting on a really cool workshop or do I want to pay my tax? Well, in the beginning of our business, which is 20 years ago, by the way, it's actually, we chose to keep our money in our pocket. I'd rather pay a little penalty on that growing than worry about it. Let's see more fun stuff. How are distributions from limited partners positioned in apartment syndication taxed? So, Doug, that's a pretty good question. Do you want to answer that, Mr. Webb, or do you want me to do it?
I might be wrong, Toby, but you're being taxed on the limited partnerships income, your share of the limited partnerships income, not your distribution.
That is exactly right. We just had this big old discussion with somebody who was like, hey, we're going to give you back your money tax-free, and the first amount of money that you get back, you don't pay tax on. No, that's not how it works. You put an investment in, that's your basis, but your income is being spread out to you no matter what. And you can get cash back out of it, because sometimes, let's say it's an apartment, it might post zero income because you're depreciating the apartment building, but you're taking cash out. You can take up to what you invested without having to worry about it. You take more than that out, that's called receiving cash in excess of your basis, and it's taxed as capital gains.
Yes.
So, and then you're going to on an apartment complex, usually you're getting, they're depreciating against that income and you're receiving very little taxable. Usually it's next to none. And if you are receiving taxable income, you should say, why aren't you guys doing cost segregation on this thing and wiping out our tax liability? In fact, you could kick us down some losses and then we won't have to worry about paying tax for a long time because those losses will be offset by the future income from that endeavor.
And what I've seen on a lot of these syndications is beginning very early, they're starting to return capital. Mm-hmm. They're returning your investment to you. So you may only get taxed on a few thousand dollars of income, but you may get $12,000 back in distributions because they're giving you some of your money back.
That's a perfect way to put it. Somebody asked a question, tax increment reinvestment zone. That's in Texas. I am not sure what it's going to give you as far as benefit. I really don't know a ton about it. Maybe that's something that we should look at for next time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would only apply to, somebody's asking about it. What you do, hey, Susan, why don't you email that on in so we can look at it? My question must have been too long. Somebody sent me, we have a ton of questions, and if they're really long, sometimes I ignore them just because I can't read through them fast enough and it would go really long. Here's some. S-Corp owner also having a sole proprietorship. So this is kind of I think this is a continuation of our medical reimbursement plan. Does the 2% shareholder rule also apply to sole proprietorships? No, it only applies to S-Corps. The 2% shareholder rule with regards to the 105 plan. So you can actually have a spouse. So what you do is the sole proprietorship would enter into a 105 plan, and then it would cover one spouse who would then cover the other. And then that spouse could be an employee, and that could be their only compensation. There's actually a case on in the IRS on it. I tend not to like sole proprietorships because you're going to be paying more in self-employment tax than you would if it was an S-Corp. And I tend to look at these things and say, hey, let's take a look at the total amount and calculate how much it's actually going to save us depending on what type of structure. Let me see if I could find this other question. I already filed my personal taxes, but would think about rolling over $5,000 from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. Can I still do it for 2018? So can you do the rollover even after the
That's
end of the year?
A good question, but I'm thinking the rollover has to be done in the current year.
I think it has to be done in the current year too. So I don't think you can go back. So you could do it for 2019. Is there a way to find out how much I would owe before doing it? Not really. Like you can do an estimate. Usually you roll when you're having when you're in a low tax year or if you have a whole bunch of losses.
Right.
I'm going to try to find I started to buy tax liens last year. Some were redeemed but did not receive any tax form from the counties. Do I still need to report these on my return? Yes. So you got so somebody paid you the tax. How was that taxed? When you get paid the tax on the tax, is that just interest?
I'm gonna be more general and say I think it's just ordinary income.
Well, it's gonna be ordinary income no matter what, right? Even if it's interest, it's still ordinary. I just think it's not subject to.
You don't think it's subject to self-employment?
I don't think so. When I'm thinking off the top of my head, so it's another one. Email it on in. We'll get you an actual answer. Here's a fun one. Does my C-Corp used to manage out-of-state rental property have to pay the 1% gross receipts tax in my home state of Washington? Craig.
That's that B&O tax, correct?
Yep, that's the B&O tax, and it's 100% gross receipts tax on Washington businesses. If it is not a Washington business, so if it's Wyoming, then the answer is no. If it is a Washington business, then the answer is yes. You would have to pay it, which is why we sometimes park these things out of the state. Somebody says, Bertie, can I use accelerated depreciation on a new roof, AC, kitchen, and bathroom remodels? If so, what's the percentage and the time frame? An investor owns 20 single-family homes in an 8-unit complex in Florida, all rented out. So the answer is, without getting into all the new roof, AC, kitchen, and bathrooms stuff, you just use accelerated depreciation, period. And it's called cost segregation. And what you're doing is you're taking 1450 property and 1450 and 1445 property. You're separating out the property that's 27 and a half year property from the property that's in a lower or shorter period of time to depreciate. And then you're using the bonus depreciation, which is anything less than 20 years gets a 100% deduction, and you're wiping out the tax. So when you have accelerated depreciation, what you usually ends up being about a 20% boost. And when I say boost, I mean 20% of the improved value in year one would be deductible. So if you have $1 million of improvement on a piece of property, you'd get a $200,000 deduction in year one.
And the thing with roofs in particular, they're not going to qualify for accelerated depreciation. But what they may qualify as is a repair instead of a replacement.
Yeah, new roof. That's going to be stretched out over the life. That's an
improvement. Yeah. So if you're talking about complete tear off and replace, that's going to be a 27 and a half year regular depreciation. If you're talking about replacing shingles or something of that nature that where you're not doing a complete tear off, then you may have an argument to go ahead and expense that whole amount as repairs.
Mm-hmm. Right. So another question. If you pay all estimated taxes due before the year end, will there be a penalty? I imagine that means somebody didn't pay quarterlies and they paid it all up before the end of the year.
Here's how estimated taxes work. You're expected to pay a certain amount each quarter. And if you miss a quarter, then you're going to get some kind of penalty for that. So paying them all by the end of the fourth quarter doesn't really help you as much. You're still going to have a penalty. Also, withholding on anything is considered to be taken out throughout the year, even if it all occurred in December. Mm-hmm. So withholding can be really helpful when you have those missed payments. What you reading?
I am reading a really cool one. This is very complicated, so I'm going to break it into pieces. So they're saying, hey, you're limited to the $10,000 SALT deduction. Can you break that into property taxes and income taxes?
No.
You can't yet. It's proportionate.
The limitation is for that whole category of taxes, which includes sales tax, income, state and local income taxes, personal property taxes, real estate taxes, and any other kind of tax you can think of that's deductible. Mm-hmm. What you can do is you can deduct it on a home office for your real estate taxes. Mm-hmm. Real estate taxes on rental property are separately reported. So it's not a death blow.
Hey, Robert, there's something cool you can do, by the way. For example, if you have have property taxes of $8,000, I would be looking at having a home office. And I don't mean the traditional home office that you read about in all the books. We're talking about an administrative office for a company. You actually have to have a C corp or an S corp and let it reimburse you for your portion of that. On average, you're going to be somewhere in the 15 to 20% range of the use of your home if you have a home office, which means that you can reimburse of that $8,000, $1,600, so that you're not losing out on all of it. You're getting a deduction on part of it. It'll be running through your company as a deduction. Just as that's called an accountable plan. It requires that you have an S or a C corp or an LLC taxed as an S or a C corp. All right, somebody says, I bought a new multifamily in November of 18. Someone recently offered to buy it. Is it worth it for me to do a cost seg for 2018 prior to selling it? It depends, Janet. What we have to do is run the numbers. If you do a cost seg and you write off a whole bunch of, like you rapidly depreciate it for last year, we're going to have to look and say, that's 25% tops on if you sell it versus if you sell it and you owned it for, if it's 2018 and now it's this year, so it's over a year and you didn't intend to sell it, you bought it with the intent to hold, then that's tops 20% long-term capital gains. So then I'd have to say, what am I offsetting it in 2018 if I take that rapid depreciation? Maybe I'm offsetting 37% property or 30, not property, but income. Maybe I'm offsetting $200,000 of 37%. Then it might be worth it to sell it with the, after doing the cost seg, because that recapture will be at 25%. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that does make sense, because I have the tendency to say it's probably not worth doing the cost seg if you're planning on selling, because all it's going to do is lower the basis of your property.
Yep, but.
But if you're in extremely different tax brackets from your capital gain property, mm-hmm. It does make sense.
And then the other thing is, if you're saying it's November of 18 and now this is less than a year, so you're going to get hammered on the ordinary tax treatment. I'm going to take as much deduction as I can for last year, carry it into this year, and then at least my recapture is at 25%. I'm not aware of recapture being classified as ordinary income, sold less than a year.
No.
Yeah. So usually if you're buying and selling, they're not going to let you do the depreciation, but here you bought it for the purpose of holding it. So I hope that makes sense. Jake, if I set up an S-Corp to support my self-employed trader status, do I need to segregate funds or can I use my personal bank accounts to support my trading? Well, you'd have to have the trading account inside of the corporation. So you could still fund it with your personal accounts. There's no problem with that. You're a shareholder. You can put money in and out of an S-Corp whenever you need. Can we write off repair expenses like roof shingles for a personal home? Personal home. The answer is no, you cannot. It's personal property. You don't get to write things off for repairing your house. It stinks. And they should change that, but they don't let you. Somebody says, we've had it for less than 6 months and it's $480,000. That's that same property. And Jen, I'm going to say do the cost segregation on that one. Like, it might make sense. I might get an $80,000 amount that's going to be, instead of being taxed at my ordinary bracket, it's going to be removed out and taxed at 25%. Can cost segregation be used on an existing rental property? Yes. In fact, you can go back and grab, I think, 6 years. Somebody then said, Toby, I do have a Nevada C Corp. I live in Illinois, but I don't think Jeff understood my question on taxation of refund next year on state income taxes for prior year. Robert, you're going to have to email that in because I have hundreds of questions that just came in over this last little jaunt. But we'd be happy to answer it. This is a good time because it's 4:30. Went a little bit over, only 50% over. Yay.
We're still short.
Yeah. Sometimes we go a little longer, but I'm going to say this is a good breaking time. Guys, I just want to thank you for hanging out with us and making these things fun. Somebody just said, what deductions can I take as a W-2 contractor in Washington? If you're W-2, you can't. We actually went over that one. Alex, if you didn't hear it, listen to the recording because we did a big section on that W-2 contractor earlier on. That was one of the main questions that we answered. So I'd go back and listen to that portion. But unfortunately, the reimbursement, the non-reimbursed employee expenses is gone under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. All right, guys. Hey, you know what? Invite your friends next time. These are fun. We want to keep spreading the word. It's always good. And I think that every time I see questions where I know there's anxiety behind the question and it's a big thing that someone's going, oh, man, I'm afraid to ask. I appreciate you asking and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to answer it. And hopefully not just me, but Jeff, obviously. But it always helps us as people to be able to get some answers to questions, and it's always better when you're not being billed $300 an hour for it, right, Jeff?
No, absolutely.
Yeah, see, Jeff likes to bill. In fact, he starts writing out invoices, and he just doesn't know how to bill for multiple questions asked. If he ever figures it out, we're gonna have to remove him from these, because he'll start sending everybody a bill. No, I'm just teasing. Jeff's one of the few accountants that I genuinely like, because he has that spirit of sharing, and the first thing he says isn't always no. He's usually he's a thinker, so I appreciate that. All right, guys, next time, 2 weeks, listen to the podcast, tell your friends, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.